For my part in this celebration, I wanted to begin by reading four poems of Emily Dickinson's. I think I got the good spot. I'm going to read one at least of the very well-known poems and three not so well-known. There are in this book something over 1,700 poems, and I've had fun in the last weeks doing my homework, as it were, and found some delicious things that I wasn't that familiar with. This is a fairly early poem, 1861, and I thought it was kind of nice to read for two reasons. It describes New England, which was Emily Dickinson's home, of course, and is also mine. And there's something at the end of it that I liked so much, a sad but very human touch. She is, after all, a mystery as well as a miracle. And it's kind of nice to get these the sense of her as a person, which she herself gave us, rather than what we are exploring about her. What is paradise? Who live there? Are they farmers? Do they hoe? Do they know that this is Amherst and that I am coming too? Do they wear new shoes in Eden? Is it always pleasant there? Won't they scold us when we're homesick? Or tell God how cross we were. You are sure there's such a person as a father in the sky? So if I get lost there ever, or do what the nurse calls die, I shan't walk the jasper barefoot. Ransomed folks won't laugh at me. Maybe Eden ain't so lonesome as New England used to be. This is a later poem, 1883, quite a late poem. There came a wind like a bugle. It quivered through the grass, and a green chill upon the heat so ominous did pass. We barred the windows and the doors as from an emerald ghost. The dune's electric moccasin that very instant passed. On a strange mob of panting trees and fences fled away, and rivers where the houses ran, those looked that lived that day. The bell within the steeple wild, the flying tidings told, how much can come, how much can go, and yet abide the world. If I could sing, I would sing a poem. So many of them have that music, of course, of the hymns that they almost make you try to do it. I won't try. Three. This one especially, I didn't know before and thought such a pleasure. I love the repetitions of the lines, which is something which, of course, I do in my own work. It's a little bit unlike her usual phrasing, a little bit different. Under the light, yet under. Under the grass and the dirt, under the beetle's cellar, under the clover's root, further than arm could stretch were it giant long, further than sunshine could with a day year long, over the light yet over the arc of the bird, over the comet's chimney, over the cubit head, further than guess can gallop, further than riddle ride. Oh, for a disk to the distance between ourselves and the dead. And the one which, of course, will be familiar to all of us. Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. We slowly drove. He knew no haste. And I had put away my labor and my leisure, too, for his civility. We passed the school where children strove at recess in the ring. We passed the fields of gazing grain. We passed the setting sun, or rather, he passed us. The dews drew quivering and chill, for only gossamer my gown, my tippet, only tulle. We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground. The roof was scarcely visible, the cornice in the ground. Since then, 'tis centuries, and yet feels shorter than the day I first surmised the horses' heads were toward eternity. I will read about half poems from American Primitive, the last book to come out, and about half from a new book that will be out next month. It's called Dream World, and I'll start with one of those. I thought it was a nice one to start with. Dickinson's work is so studded with light, and I have a previous book called 12 Moons. I seem to have been a kind of soaked in the moon during that period of time. Now I can't bear to miss a sunrise. I seem to have a lot of poems about the sun coming up. This is called Morning Poem. Every morning the world is created. Under the orange sticks of the sun, the heaped ashes of the night turn into leaves again and fasten themselves to the high branches. And the ponds appear like black cloth on which are painted islands of summer lilies. If it is your nature to be happy, you will swim away along the soft trails for hours, your imagination alighting everywhere. And if your spirit carries within it the thorn that is heavier than lead, if it's all you can do to keep on trudging, there is still somewhere deep within you a beast shouting that the earth is exactly what it wanted. Each pond with its blazing lilies is a prayer heard and answered lavishly every morning. Whether or not you have ever dared to be happy, whether or not you have ever dared to pray. Always, but certainly in April, one spring poem is appropriate. This is called Blossom. In April, the ponds open like black blossoms. The moon swims in everyone. There's fire everywhere. Frogs shouting their desire, their satisfaction. What we know, that time chops at us all like an iron hoe, that death is a state of paralysis. What we long for, joy before death, nights in the swale. Everything else can wait, but not this thrust from the root of the body. What we know, we are more than blood, we are more than our hunger, and yet we belong to the moon. And when the ponds open, when the burning begins, the most thoughtful among us dreams of hurrying down into the black petals, into the fire, into the night where time lies shattered, into the body of another. I live on Cape Cod, Provincetown, which is a very gorgeous and beautiful and sea kind of place. And I'm a sort of slow take. I think I went to Provincetown. I looked for the inland things there. Now I'm beginning to write more poems about things that pertain to the sea. This is a poem in several parts. It's in the new book. I'll pause between the sections. It's called Dogfish. And for those of you who are inland, the dogfish is a shark, but quite a small shark. I've seen them no longer than this. They can get a little bigger. Quite harmless, really, to people, to swimmers. Dogfish. Some kind of relaxed and beautiful thing kept flickering in with the tide and looking around. Black as a fisherman's boot with a white belly. If you asked for a picture, I would have to draw a smile under the perfectly round eyes and above the chin, which was rough as a thousand sharpened nails. And you know what a smile means, don't you? I wanted the past to go away. I wanted to leave it like another country. I wanted my life to close and open like a hinge, like a wing, like the part of the song where it falls down over the rocks, an explosion, a discovery. I wanted to hurry into the work of my life. I wanted to know whoever I was alive for a little while. It was evening and no longer summer. Three small fish, I don't know what they were, huddled in the highest ripples as it came swimming in again, effortless, the whole body, one gesture, one black sleeve that could fit easily around the bodies of three small fish. Also, I wanted to be able to love, and we all know how that one goes, don't we? Slowly, the dogfish tore open the soft basins of water. You don't want to hear the story of my life, and anyway, I don't want to tell it. I want to listen to the enormous waterfalls of the sun. And anyway, it's the same old story. A few people just trying one way or another to survive. Mostly, I want to be kind. And nobody, of course, is kind or mean for a simple reason. And nobody gets out of it having to swim through the fires to stay in this world. And look, look, look. I think those little fish better wake up and dash themselves away from the hopeless future that is bulging toward them. And probably, if they don't waste time looking for an easier world, they can do it. About a year and a half ago, I was on a United States Information Agency journey to the Far East. We were gone about 5 weeks and saw, in quotes, four countries. So this was a pretty rapid journey. All the same, it was amazing and wonderful. And I've just been beginning now, in a way, to write about it. We went first to New Zealand, which is an extraordinarily beautiful country. Has, I think, 70 million sheep and 5 million people. From New Zealand, we flew to Jakarta, which is the capital city of Indonesia. That city has 9 million people just in the city. So it was very, very shocking to see the difference. This is a poem called Acid. In Jakarta, among the vendors of flowers and soft drinks, I saw a child with a hideous mouth begging, and I knew the wound was made for a way to stay alive. What I gave him wouldn't keep a dog alive. What he gave me from the brown coin of his sweating face was a look of cunning. I carry it like a bead of acid to remember how, once in a while, you can creep out of your own life and become someone else. An explosion in that nest of wires we call the imagination. I will never see him again, I suppose. But what of this rag, this shadow flung like a boy's body into the walls of my mind, bleeding their sour taste, insult and anger, the great movers? I thought I'd like to read today a poem I wrote about another poet and a dear friend. Stanley Kunitz lives in Provincetown in the summer and has for many, many years. And he is well known as an extraordinary poet and person. He's also a very astonishing gardener. His garden is quite famous there. People may not know it's Stanley's, but you just stop your car and look in amazement at what he's done. This is a poem I very much wanted to write, and it took its form from his garden. There's one line I should explain a little bit. It's a line that says, little snakes lie on the boughs. And in this garden, Stanley has a couple of small trees, and the little garden snakes come out in the afternoon. They climb the tree and dangle out to have little sun baths. Stanley Kunitz. I used to imagine him coming from the house, like Merlin strolling with important gestures through the garden where everything grows so thickly where birds sing, little snakes lie on the boughs thinking of nothing but their own good lives, where petals float upward, their colors exploding, and trees open their moist pages of thunder. It has happened every summer for years. But now I know more about the great wheel of growth and decay and rebirth, and know my vision for a falsehood. Now I see him coming from the house. I see him on his knees, cutting away the diseased, the superfluous, coaxing the new, knowing that the hour of fulfillment is buried in years of patience, yet willing to labor like that on the mortal wheel. Oh, what good it does the heart to know it isn't magic. Like the human child I am, I rush to imitate. I watch him as he bends among the leaves and vines to hook some weed or other. Even when I do not see him, I think of him there, raking and trimming, stirring up those sheets of fire between the smothering weights of earth, the wild and shapeless air. And I'll finish with two poems again from America. The trees are turning their own body, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue-shouldered ponds, and every pond, no matter what it fires, black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. And the last poem also has its genesis in Provincetown. Many of you have certainly heard of, or perhaps had the experience yourself, of going out to visit with the whales. It's something that's been done in the last few years a great deal. And it began on the Atlantic coast in Provincetown with the dolphin fleet. So I have been fortunate in having the boats right there, and I've gone out to many and many a time. Primarily, it's the humpback whales that we hope to see. They are an endangered species and therefore no longer hunted, and perhaps it's partly for that reason, or perhaps it's just some wonderful friendliness and curiosity that makes them come so readily right to the boat. They're 45, 50 feet long and many tons in weight, and you might think of yourself in peril, but indeed it's not true. They're agile for all their immense size and careful for all their great curiosity. They will come very close, but only for our pleasure. Again, it's a poem in several parts. I'll pause between the parts. Maybe that means finish. The word stellwagen appears in one of the sections, and that is an area where the whales feed off of Cape Cod humpbacks. There is all around us this country of original fire. You know what I mean. The sky, after all, stops at nothing, so something has to be holding our bodies in its rich and timeless stables, or else we would fly away. Off Stellwagen, off the Cape, the humpbacks rise. Carrying their tonnage of barnacles and joy, they leap through the water, they nuzzle back under it like children at play. They sing, too, and not for any reason you can't imagine. Three of them rise to the surface near the bow of the boat, then dive deeply, their huge scarred flukes tip to the air. We wait, not knowing just where it will happen, Suddenly they smash through the surface. Someone begins shouting for joy, and you realize it is yourself as they surge upward, and you see for the first time how huge they are as they breach and dive and breach again through the shining blue flowers of the split water, and you see them for some unbelievable part of a moment against the sky like nothing you've ever imagined, like the myth of the fifth morning galloping out of darkness, pouring heavenward, spinning, then they crash back under those black silks, and we all fall back together into that wet fire. You know what I mean. I know a captain who has seen them playing with seaweed, swimming through the green islands, tossing the slippery branches into the air. I know a whale that will come to the boat whenever she can and nudge it gently along the bow with her long flipper. I know several lives worth living. Listen, whatever it is you try to do with your life, nothing will ever dazzle you like the dreams of your body, its spirit longing to fly while the dead weight bones toss their dark mane and hurry back into the fields of glittering fire where everything, even the great whale, throbs with song. Thank you.